Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're taking a look at your home today. Home improvement, fighting the cold. Maybe we can talk about COVID in your home as well as we visit with John Freiberger. He is a registered home inspector, specializes in designing air barrier systems that reduce energy consumption. And he's with us every couple of months to talk about home projects and repair. It's always fun to have him with us. And we're going to talk about problems related to those darn cold temperatures and, of course, take your questions as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Glad to be back, Larry.
Yeah, we get some pretty cold weather in Wisconsin, but this stretch is kind of ridiculous. It's been going on for a while, and I'm sure that a lot of people are having problems with, frozen pipes, for example. What's the best way to prevent that?
The best way to prevent it is to keep your house warm. And what I've noticed during these really cold weeks in February is how much draft, just plain blowing air, I am feeling when I'm in a basement and then look into a crawl space. Now, we've always known that crawl spaces, I mean, no one goes into the crawl space. I mean, it's dirty, there's mouse droppings, there's all kinds of things. So you don't go in there. So you don't really notice if there's problems there. But when it's this cold and air is leaving your house because the warm air wants to leave, you know, warm air is buoyant, and it's really cold outside. So we have more air leaving the upper part of our house, which means air's got to come in low. So you go into the basement, doesn't feel too bad, and then you put your flashlight at the opening of the crawl space, and your hair gets blown back by the draft that's coming out of there. So it really has impressed upon me the last couple of weeks that we need to pay more attention to crawl spaces. And we've talked about crawl spaces before. We had a really good question from a listener about a year ago saying, what do I do with my crawl space? It was under a manufactured house. And what we have become more and more convinced of over the years is that we need to seal crawl spaces just spectacularly, just absolutely completely. Because crawl spaces in houses that have them seem to be the number one source of cold air. Now, if I'm looking into this crawl space in your house and my hair is getting blown back by the cold draft coming out of there, what do you think is happening to the pipes in the bathroom that's right above that crawl space?
Yeah. Or the kitchen sink or something.
Right. So insulation isn't going to help if we have so many air leaks, because insulation will act as a filter. Air goes right through insulation, and when a home inspector performs a home inspection, they'll often look at the sill boxes in your basement, and if that pink or yellow fiberglass has a lot of gray, sooty sort of stuff on it, the home inspector is going to say to you, Larry, this house leaks, and what is happening is your sill box insulation is actually filtering dirt out of the outside air. But it means that outside air is coming in large quantities. So we did a program last winter on your winter checklist, what to do when the winter wind blows. And I want to reemphasize that people that have crawl spaces or even people that have basements need to go down there and take a look and look for drafts. The last inspection I did out in the country, there were mice everywhere. And there were five different places where if I turned off the lights in the basement, I could see outside. Well, these are easy things to fix. We don't really see it in the summer. But when it is 10 below zero for 3 weeks, it really begins to get our attention.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are things that people have done in the past to try and deal with this. I can remember quite a while back somebody being told that they should let their faucet drip for a while. Others have used heat tape on the pipes that are near the wall. What is the best way, is there some other way aside from just redoing that whole spays. Is there a best way to deal with those frozen pipes?
Well, there's short-term and long-term. I mean, long-term means we've got to analyze our crawl space for water vapor, radon, air leaks, and lack of insulation, and we've got to take care of it. But we're not going to be doing that this week because everybody's busy. So you're right. We want to keep those pipes from freezing. And, yes, letting the faucet drip, as wasteful as that is, and for people in the country, if they're on a septic system, the danger of overloading a septic system, that is going to help. Open all the doors. Maybe you keep the door to your bathroom closed all the time. Well, keep the doors to all of the rooms in the house open so we get maximum circulation. I have a barn, Larry, that was not well designed and well insulated. I have water pipes. And I have a heated barn, fortunately. Not very heated, but it's heated. But I turn the temperature up about 3 degrees when it really gets cold, because that little extra bit of heat is going to help. One thing to also check for is walk around the outside and make sure you don't have a garden hose still connected. Because if you have that connected to an exterior faucet, we may get an ice buildup. So if you've got anything connected to the outside, get that taken care of. So, and yes, you can add heat tape. I always worry a little bit about heat tape and fires, but, you know, heat tape isn't like the old heat tape. Now it is thermostatically controlled. It turns itself off during as things warm up, et cetera. So, yes, we can do all of those things as short term. I've seen people even take a fan and blow air into the crawl space out of the basement, because the basement is warmer because of the heat loss we have from the ducts. But what we're fighting is we're fighting air buoyancy leaving the house and then cold air coming in. So air leaves high, has to be replaced by air coming in low, which we call that stack effect, just like a big fireplace, you know, chimney. The air is coming, the warm air is going up, so it's going to suck in at the bottom. Fortunately, we've got another 10 days or so to go with this. But for those of you who are having frozen pipes this winter, get them thawed out. Do it safely, and then think about doing some insulation air sealing so that never happens again.
Let's take some calls. There are a lot of callers online, and Sherry's got something not relating to that, but something else that's pretty common in cold times. Sherry in Middleton, thanks for calling.
You are so welcome. My problem is our windows sweat a great deal on the inside. We have in-floor heating. I have tried the shades up, the shades down, turning on the fans, the overhead fans to circulate air. Nothing seems to work. When we get into the teens, the windows sweat like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I had that problem this week. A gentleman sent me pictures of the wet carpet in his bedroom, where the metal clad patio doors were had so much ice on them that as it melted, it made a mess of the carpet. And we found out that the humidity in his house was about 55%. Oh. He lowered it to below 30, and magically, the situation has been cured. So what we have to remember, Sherry, is that the higher our relative humidity is in the house, the more water vapor there is in that warm air. And when we get to what we call the first condensing surface, which is a surface where the temperature is below the dew point, we are going to get condensation. Now, the dew point changes with the relative humidity. So if you have, if your house, you usually keep it, say, around 70 degrees, and then you keep your humidity at, let's say, 45 degrees, well, what we find is that it doesn't have to get terribly cold. So at 40 degrees interior humidity, 70 degrees, when your window gets to 43 degrees, it starts to condense. So what you need to do is you need to start lowering that relative humidity. If you drop it 10 points so that the relative humidity is 30 degrees, then when that window material, glass or frame or whatever, is not going to condense until you get down to 36 degrees. And so the lower the relative humidity is, and you can't really go much lower than 25, 26, or it starts getting uncomfortable. It's not good for our mucous membranes. But the first thing to do is to try to lower that humidity. turning on the fans can help a little bit because it may warm the windows, keep the air right around the windows warmer, so that condensing surface becomes warmer. Closing the shades will cool the windows and will generally cause more condensation. So check to see what the humidity is in your house. Now, do not look at your April air or whatever humidistat on the wall. They are inaccurate. But for less than $20, you can go onto Amazon or any other place and get a good quality digital hygrometer, which is basically just a humidistat, with memory. They'll give you the high and the low for the day and what the temperature is and the high and the low temperature. It's a great little thing to have in the house. It lets you know the water vapor in your air and how much the temperature is changing in your house. And that at least gives you a little bit of science.
There you go, Sherry. I hope that helps, Sherry. Thank you so much. Yeah, did you have another question?
No, that was it. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Jim in Winnebago County, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, John and Larry. I have an alternative for a solution with a crawl space. We built a cabin up in Iron County that is occupied just periodically. It has a concrete floored crawl space about 2.5 feet tall, and the joists between the floor joists are insulated, and there's a plastic vapor barrier over the surface towards the cement floor. The crawl space also has four openings in it that are screened. Always a challenge keeping the mice out, for sure. But during the summer, that crawl space is actually closed off to ventilation. In the winter, it's opened up. And if the timing is wrong, what you end up is getting rain off of your vapor barrier. You know, in the winter, it's open to the environment, so the crawl space is basically close to ambient temperature. And in order to deal with the situation with the water lines running between the joists, what I did is I took a hint from the people that really know cold weather, and that's the people from Canada. There's a corporation called Heatline that sells a product that threads down the middle of the intake water line, and it's threaded from my pressure tank all the way down to about 3 or 4 feet below the ground in the crawl space where the water line comes in from the pump. We drain the lines during the winter, but that water line is full of water. It's thermostatically controlled, and I have absolutely never had a problem. I will say that it's expensive, but it works 100%.
Well, Jim, thanks for comment on that.
Yeah, very sophisticated system there, Jim. But like you say, expensive. And when we get to most of the homes that I inspect, and most of the homes where people call me with issues with frozen pipes or too much cold, are places that are occupied all year long. But it sounds like the system that you have for seasonally occupied is really indeed a good one, because you are changing that air out during the winter, so you're not getting water vapor, radon, and other things that are gathering in that crawl space in the winter. So sounds like you found a very good solution, one that some people perhaps can't afford. I know most people just try to blow out their pipes as best they can on their cottages. But that is a company I'll have to take a look at, because that's not one I've heard of.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it very much. John Freiberger, our guest, Wisconsin registered home inspector, and his firm is Freiberger and Associates. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you, my friends, are listening to the Ideas Network. We're fighting the cold on our home improvement show today with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in with your questions and with your comments. Love to hear from you. And boy, we have lots of callers online. So let's go back to the phones. Tom and Nelson, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Yes, John, please don't come inspect my home. it's not cold weather, but I undertook a cold weather project yesterday. I stripped the wallpaper off my kitchen, and I've encountered the dreaded lead paint underneath that's chipping, peeling, and so on. There's a couple layers of paint. The top layer is not lead, and underneath, on the bottom, there's a layer of lead paint that's chipping and peeling and so on. Can I chemically remove it? I thought about using a heat gun. I don't really know if that's any good. You got any tips?
Yeah. Well, a heat gun, you wouldn't, there could be some problems there. What do you think, John?
Yeah, Tom, what do you think about encapsulating it rather than trying to remove it?
That would be fine, too. I wouldn't know what type of material to use.
Well, several different companies have it. The one I am most familiar with, I hate to mention a trade name, I'm not endorsing, but one that I used for many years on old houses where lead is such a problem is from the Glidden Company. It used to call it the Glid Wall System. I don't know if they still call it the same thing, but basically what they had is they had a very thick latex paint, a little heavier than usual. The nice thing about that latex paint, Tom, was it was federally certified by FHA as a liquid applied vapor barrier. So if you've got an old house, you're going to kill two birds with one stone. We're going to apply a vapor barrier so we don't get condensation in the wall, and we're going to enclose the lead paint. So you put this on with a roller. While it is wet, you put up about 3 foot wide sheets of thin fiberglass. Now, older people like myself remember things they used to call wallpaper backing paper that was put on rough walls to make it smooth enough, and you put the wallpaper over the top of it. Well, this is similar, but instead of being cellulose, it's fiberglass. Then you put a second coat over the top of that, and you can include a texture if you like. Basically, when you get done, you've covered all your lead paint, you've bridged over all the cracks in the wall, and you have provided yourself with a vapor barrier. So I would take a look at that. Obviously, you're going to have to scrape off everything that's loose first. You're going to have to HEPA vac that up. You're going to have to wear a throwaway Tyvek suit. You're going to have to wear the right respirator to make sure that you're safe. But then I think if you do those two applications of paint and maybe add texture to the last one. One important thing, when you put the mats on, you overlap them by about an inch. And then you use an X-Acto knife or one of those sharp box cutters, and you cut down a half inch from either side, peel off the two little strips, and you get an absolute tight, dead butt between them. So this is something that I personally installed many, many, many times in my youth when I still did useful work, and it worked really well. So I would check with Glidden, but you may just want to do a Google search for fiberglass wall repair systems, et cetera, or call your local paint store or hardware store, and they may know where you can get these products. Does that help, Tom?
I think so. Sounds like a lot of work, but that's okay. We'll give it a shot.
It is a lot of work, but it's so much safer. And remembering, you're killing three birds with one stone.
Yeah.
You're encapsulating lead, covering cracks, and giving yourself a vapor barrier and really a bit of an air barrier all in one. And the cost of it compared to doing things like drywalling over or tearing it down and re-drywalling, it was about a tenth as much to do that sort of work.
There you go. Good luck, Tom. Thank you so much for calling. And Dennis in Two Rivers, let's go to you now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Larry. Hi, John. I have a suggestion, then I have a question. The suggestion is to use the air purifier to blow air onto windows to reduce the humidity, plus then it gets crud out of the air. Now, as far as the question, I know since you mentioned air rises and leaves the house, I guess, through roof vents, does that mean cold air is pulled in from, like, a vacuum, or does air get pushed in by atmospheric pressure and wind? And if so, whether wind is pushed, whether air is pushed in or sucked in, how does that work as far as where we should put the caulking? Should we caulk on the inside or the outside? Have I
overloaded
you too much there?
You bring up in your question, Dennis, how very complicated houses are. So let's assume there's no wind blowing outside at all. Now, the air is leaking out not just from the roof vents, because hopefully what we really want nowadays, Dennis, is we want to have our attics sealed. We don't want any air coming from the house into the attic or from the attic into the house. And that's difficult to do in an older home, but it can be done. But your windows leak on the second floor where you have an outlet in the wall, a little bit of air goes in there, finds its way out. So basically, we have to sort of think of our second floor of our house as almost like a pincushion filled with water. There's a lot of little places where with the pressure of air buoyancy, it can get out. So if it's going out, nature abhors a vacuum. So the lower floor's air pressure is getting to be less than it is on the exterior. So you're quite right when you say there's actually suction. You've got a couple pascals of pressure of air coming into the house. Now, if the wind is roaring at 30 miles an hour out of the north, the way it has recently, you've got positive pressure against the outside of the house, so you're blowing the air in. Plus, on the far side of the house, you are sucking air out because you've got a lee effect where the wind is going over the roof, past the walls, and you get a low pressure on the south exterior. So, yes, it's really complicated. Now, the question you asked was, where do you caulk? Well, basically, you do your sealing from the interior because what are you sealing on the outside? If you caulk your wood siding, you're not going to caulk all of your wood siding, not all of those hundreds of overlaps, which will break the caulk as they expand and contract. You're not going to caulk your vinyl siding. So what you really need to do is you need to do as much sealing as you can from the interior. Basically, what we find is the most effective thing that exists today is the two-part expansive urethane sprays. And if you have a large area, it's best to call somebody who does that commercially. You can buy the cans of great stuff, et cetera, yourself to do some small areas. We see a lot of it misapplied. We just see these terrible messes of all this old yellow foam all over the place. So analyze really carefully what's going on. Now, as Larry and I say on every single program, the best way to do that is to go to Focus on Energy, find somebody who does energy analysis in your area, and hire them and have them do a pressure door test to find out how leaky your house is and where the leaks are. Because sometimes it really surprises us as to what's really leaking. Does that help, Dennis?
Yeah. Okay, I caulk the right places and not just caulk where it might not be needed.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Get some science behind it before you spend your hard-earned dollars. And, yeah, it costs some money to get the science. But the other thing is, check with Focus on Energy. I don't know whether your local utility participates or not. If your local utility does participate, see what we can get for rebates. There are times when you can get a rebate, something like $2,000, if you lower your energy costs by X percent. The programs are always changing. So it's always good to go to Focus on Energy for those of you who have participated in utilities. And there are parts of the state where, it's a local co-op or a city utility. They're not participating, so then those benefits aren't available. But anyone can hire an energy analyst who will use thermal imaging and a blower door test to really tell you how your house is acting.
And you will likely be surprised, at least for some of it, when you find out where some of the leaks are coming from. There you go, Dennis. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Cindy in Lake Mills, your turn now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I was calling to let John, he was spot on the heating. I have in-floor heat, and I used to get black mold on my windows during the winter months and couldn't figure out why. Well, I was running my humidifier and putting more moisture in the air. And I know our house, it's really old, so when we took it down to studs before moving in, we did the spray-on insulation where it expanded, because we wanted to make sure we got all the nooks and crannies before moving in. So, I mean, we have a great R value on our house. But we also turn our fans on the opposite direction so that it's pushing the warm air down, and I haven't had a bit of problem with any mold anymore.
Sounds excellent,
for you,
Cindy.
Yeah. Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate that call. Well, good information there. Let's go to Becky in Rio next. Hi, Becky.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So right now, I live on a farm in the country, and we have plenty of wood to make, and I have two strapping young men, my sons, who make wood for me and fill the wood stove morning and night. But I'm just thinking about the future. If I think that maybe they would not like to do making wood all their lives for mom, I'm thinking about solar energy and solar heating. Is that really viable in Wisconsin? What are my options, and where do I start to look into that?
Yes. Well, there's various types of achieving solar heating. One is to use heat gathering transfer panels. So you're running like a glycol solution or something through large panels that are on your roof. You are collecting the sunlight when the sun is out, and then you are using various compressors and things to step that up so that you get heat for your home. You may or may not, depending upon the heat loss of your house, be able to cover the heating that way. Another way is to take a look at switching your home into the new high-efficiency electric heat pumps and putting photovoltaics on your roof, maybe on the barn roof, so that basically you're going to be running up your electricity bill by using the heat pump, but you're running down your electricity bill because you're gathering all of this energy, again, when the sun shines. The other way, and often it ends up being tax credit dependable, dependent as to whether it's affordable, is if we go to a geothermal system. Geothermal systems, especially out in the country, and depending on your soil type, can be really quite effective. They certainly are not cheap. But if you are on LP out in the country, as many people are, where you're paying so much for BTU, so I think what you probably need to do is to talk to an HVAC contractor who is really very knowledgeable and who has experience in different types of systems. And again, if you happen to be on an electric utility that is a member of the Focus on Energy team, you can take a look and see what rebates. I know for a while, I believe they're rebating the high-efficiency electric heat pumps pretty heavily. So there's a plethora of different options out there. And speaking to an expert is probably a good idea to figure out the options. The other thing is, we'll repeat ourselves, is that you may want to have an energy analysis done in your house to see if you can seal up leaks and perhaps add any insulation that's necessary so that you reduce the number of BTUs that you need in the winter for heat.
Yeah, that makes very good sense. Becky, good luck. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Arvid in Westby next. Hi, Arvid.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. You're the best thing on public radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The last caller about wood, I think of Jerry App saying, those people who say cutting wood warms you once, it warms you more than that. He goes. My ranch house built in 73, I've got styrofoam batting in the sill plate in the boxes. Would it be wise, and a couple callers ago, Dennis talks about, or you talked about Focus on Energy, and I should check to see if my co-op, electric co-op does that. Spray foam, would that be wise to pull out the batting and spray those boxes, have that done?
Yeah, there's two ways you can do it. You can either pay the money for the science to have an energy inspector come and pressure test your house, or you can go down to the basement and pull out the insulation. If it looks dirty, it means those sill boxes are leaking. Mm-hmm. If it's absolutely clean, I mean, if it's as clean looking as the day it was new, well, then those sill boxes aren't leaking much. But most of the time, what you pull it out and you'll find that you've got a lot of gray soot where the air is entering. And I feel that the two-part urethane spray sill box sealant does a great job for people. I think it's better than anything else. The only caution that I have on a house 1973 or older, 1873, is if you have a masonry or a stucco exterior, Then I have some concerns about sealing the sill boxes because they're going to be sealed so well that we are not going to have heat leaving the basement and drying out moisture that may have gotten through the brick or the stucco. But if you've got a house that's got vinyl siding, wood siding, asbestos siding, you know, whatever siding, I think that that is probably the way to go. You can do it yourself if you're handy. You can go online. You can order the, you know, like pair of the 25-pound. They look like little LP tank things you use for the grill. And then a hose and a mixer. And you can do the spraying yourself. But insulation has really become competitive because so many people now are doing that sort of work. So do a little bit of checking and see what you find when you pull that insulation out. And if it's really dirty, think about getting that insulated.
Yeah. Makes sense. Arvid, thank you. Appreciate the call. John.
One of the things that we forget about, Larry, is that, you know, I always talk about air leaving the house and causing air to be sucked in lower. But, of course, if Arvid really seals his basement, if it is absolutely tight, you're not going to have as much air leaving the house because that air can't be replaced that easily. So you actually end up lowering the air pressure in the house, and that then fights the air buoyancy. So ceiling high or ceiling low, both of them are effective. Generally, ceiling high has a bigger bang for the buck, but you may find on a 1973 ranch that you have a significant effect on heat loss by sealing the seal boxes low.
You know, all this talk about ceiling, I'm thinking about COVID. I'm sure you've had questions about from people about how do I deal with COVID in the home? And I think part of that relates to having fresh air in the house. Or am I wrong on that?
You are correct. And I'm a member of an organization called ASHRAE, American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers. And they have a website, which is just ASHRAE, ASHRAE.org. And anybody can go there and download stuff. And they have this, I think, slips by everybody except for engineers, Larry. But you may remember some stories about when these hospitals are saying, hey, we've got to convert this maternity ward into a COVID ward. One of the first things they do is call in the engineers. The HVAC engineers had to come in, put in negative pressure, put in air scrubbers, et cetera, so that the hospital would be less unsafe for the people working in the COVID wards. And we have, there's study after study now. We've got offices that have been shut up for a year where people are going to be coming back in May and June. We have companies looking at retrofitting their HVAC system so it's safer. And ASHRAE has been looking at houses as well. And they actually have a bunch of recommendations for people with houses. And some of them, I didn't realize how cheap and doubly productive they're going to be. One of the things they said is upgrade your furnace filter. So furnace filters, Larry, are rated between the number 4 and the number 16, and it's called a MERV, M-E-R-V, which is the minimum effective rated value. I don't know what that really means, but anyway, the 16 is better and the 4 is worse. And if you go to the hardware store and buy that little 1-inch filter and slam it in your furnace, that's basically a MERV 4. It's not doing much. But if you get up to a MERV 11, which is usually like the 4-inch thick, the space guards, the April airs, et cetera. And you run that, turn your furnace fan on, and you run that. What ASHRAE has determined is that has the same effect as wearing a mask indoors. So you have a person come over who's asymptomatic, and they sneeze. If your furnace is on with a MERV 11 to 14 filter, it's almost the same as if you were wearing a mask. They do also want us to increase the air changes in our house because the solution to pollution is dilution. But that, of course, when the weather's like this in Wisconsin, is difficult. And the other thing that people have been calling me on is ultraviolet lights. And since the 1930s, we have known that ultraviolet lights at a certain wavelength, which I believe that 267 is the wavelength we want, which is called UVC, will kill almost anything, including our COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 virus. Now, exactly how they're put in and things, you can also get online because they need to be a foot apart, et cetera, et cetera. But between a filter and having ultraviolet lights, they believe that you can actually knock 96% of the viruses out of the air. Now, that's not just COVID. It was also cold and flu, et cetera. So all of this information is out there and is available now from ASHRAE and probably from other organizations as well. And the other thing that they recommend is these portable air cleaners. And the portable air cleaners have a rating on them also. It's called a CADR rating, which simply means clean air delivery rate. You know, and they say that you need to have a CADR of 170 or better. So in other words, you need something that has some significant airflow. But that these portable air cleaners are also quite effective. The studies coming out of ASHRAE, I just started reading one this morning from the December issue. I'm way behind, I guess. but so much research is being done on this, trying to make our houses safer. And if you just think of buying a better furnace filter, your air quality is going to be better in the house because it's going to be cleaner. Plus, you're reducing your risk of catching the virus the same as if you're wearing a face mask. And if you had to completely put in a new filter box, a new, you know, for the filters and everything, it's only a few hundred dollars to do a 50% reduction in your risk of getting sick at home. So a lot of those things I think are well worth investigating. Talk to a good HVAC professional, somebody who really knows what they're doing in your area, and get some good advice and make your house safer.
Makes very good sense. John Freiberger, our guest, registered home inspector for Wisconsin, his firm Freiberger and Associates. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement today with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in today. Really appreciate it. We have every line filled, so I think we'll go back to the phones, John, and talk to another John in Plymouth. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. I have a question. I have a newer house, about 5 years old, and the vent pipe going out the roof for the plumbing system is just a 2-inch PCV, and it extends maybe 18 inches past the roof line. And it's frozen up twice now in the real cold weather the last couple of years, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions on how to repair that.
I'm afraid I don't. I mean, what you've got basically is you've got rising water vapor off of the warmer plumbing. The pipe is there mostly as air admittance, but of course, when it's cold like this, the air is moving up, carrying water vapor with it, rather than necessarily moving down. So I don't have a good solution for you. I would probably call a local plumber in Plymouth, because if it's happening to you, it's probably happening to some of your neighbors, and I would call that Plymouth plumber and see if he has any suggestions.
Yep. Very good.
Good. Thank you for calling, John. Appreciate it. Dan in Menominee, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Well, I have a question on radon.
Sure.
Certainly.
One time it'll be at 4, the next time it'll be under 3, you know, it'll be at 3. I was just wondering how dangerous that is. What can be done to fix it?
So it varies a little bit. Sometimes it's at 4, sometimes at 3. What do you think, John?
Yeah, the American standard and the European standard are different. We look at, I believe it's 3.8 picocuries per cubic deciliter as being our threshold between safe and unsafe, whereas in Europe, it's 2.5. So so often our standards, you know, even between Canada and the U.S., the standards can be very different. The more radon you have, the more likelihood you have of getting lung cancer. Now, the question is, what sort of house do you live in? I live in an old, leaky 1850s house, I may have significant radon in my basement. Actually, I don't. But if I did, the house is so leaky, I don't have that much upstairs. So the characteristics of your house, the number of air changes you have, et cetera, will all have an effect. I think that what you may want to do is go online and for $75 or so, get a six-month radon test kit. So this is just a little canister. You open it up, put it in your basement, not right next to the sump pit or something, but put it sort of a neutral spot. And I like to see them there from midwinter to midsummer so that we get the heating season, the cooling season, and the windows are open season. And then send that in, and that is going to give you a reading that it isn't going to be as variable as what you're seeing with the short-term tests. And then with that, you can decide, you can probably talk to a radon expert, a mitigator in your area, decide what you're going to do about it. And there's a couple of different ways of approaching it. And one is, if you've got something like a sump pit, an open sump pit and drain tile around your house, well, that's a great place to be getting radon. But for less than $1,000, that can be turned into a radon mitigation system because you just seal it, put on a low motion pump, and you collect radon with your water collection system. If you don't have that, they can try drilling through your floor and putting in a pump to draw air from under the floor. But if you have dirt under your floor rather than a permeable, you know, pea gravel or sand or something like that, it may not work so well. So another thing to consider is increasing the air changes in your house. Now, we do that by opening the windows, but we don't want to do that in Wisconsin for about four of the months of the year. But you can take a look at what used to be called an air-to-air heat exchanger. It's now called a heat recovery vent system, where you use the inside warm air in the winter to warm the outside air that you're bringing in, but basically it's like having a mechanical window open, but without losing the heat. And you can, depending upon what you think your radon is in the house at any given time, you can increase the number of air changes per hour so that you are, again, the solution to pollution is dilution, as Joe Stilbrick always used to say, so they can lower that radon level in your house. I hope that that helps.
Yeah, and those tests, so you get those online? Do you go to your local hardware store for it, or where do you find
those? I'm not sure. I know the hardware stores, Larry, have the 24 and 48-hour. In a larger city, perhaps they would have the six-month, but if you just Google six-month radon canister test kit, and they mail it to you after 6 months, you mail it back, they mail you a lab report, and generally they're much more accurate than the short-term reports. You know, we have to do the short-term ones because, Larry, if you're buying a new house, you want to know if the basement's hot with radon or not. And we don't have 6 months to determine that. So we're doing a 48-hour test. But that is only a snapshot. As our caller said, his is going up and down. So evidently when he's testing, it's, you know, it's different. And we've seen houses where the test is 11 one day and then it's 3 the next. So depending upon when you took the snapshot, you may be fooling yourself. So the six-month test, I think, is giving us something that's more like science than a snapshot. And then that will let you know what risk you have for lung cancer or what approximate risk you have for lung cancer and how much money is it worth spending to make that house safer.
All right. There you go, Dan. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Robert in Amherst Junction, what's on your mind? Robert, are you there?
I am.
Hi, what can we do?
I'm a speaker and I buried it. Here we go.
Okay. What can we do for you?
All right, thanks. Sorry about that. So I called about insulation, but since you brought up the radar issue, may I also ask a question about that?
Sure.
Radon, I mean. So in the summer, I generally open up one of my basement doors and try to ventilate the basement as much as possible. I also have an 1850s house with rubble foundation. So would you not recommend then the 6 months, or should I go ahead with the snapshot?
No, I would definitely, especially in an old house where there's no possibility of even sealing your foundation walls, So your foundation walls are going to leak water vapor and radon the way poured concrete walls don't. So especially in your case, even more so than Dan, I would go ahead and do the six-month test to see what is happening. And again, I emphasize, I'd like to do winter, summer, and either spring or fall so that we get a good idea. Because obviously when you've got that door open in June, your radon levels can be pretty low. But right now, especially depending on the type of furnace you have, because sometimes our furnaces depressurize our basements. Sometimes they pressurize our basements. It depends upon how leaky the various duct systems are. So there's all kinds of things that affect the amount of radon we come in that we have in our house. And a lot of that has to do with air pressure. And that's why we want these six-month tests so that we actually have a sample that has some approximation of what it's like to live in that house, which the 24-hour one really doesn't give us.
And just wasn't confident in the results.
Yeah, and you had what was your other question, or did you have something about insulating?
I'm putting on part of my house, which is a little bit newer than 1850, is 2x4 studs, mm-hmm. insulated with cellulose, and I'm putting 1-inch pine siding, board and batten, on the outside. And what I've done mm-hmm. with the other parts of the house is I've put foil-faced insulation on there first. But for that one part of the house, I'm wondering, will that trap moisture inside the wall?
The answer to that is yes. Yeah, the foil-faced insulation, the Thermax and the others, it's a great product if you've got an air and a vapor barrier. But most likely you do not have that. Now, we can try the liquid applied vapor barriers, and they work except where they have openings. And we can try foaming those openings. But I think you have to be pretty careful about what you're doing. If you can, the most recent research, which comes from places like the Cold Climate Housing Research Center in Anchorage, Alaska, is what they are saying to us is if you want to avoid condensation, take whatever you want for insulation in your area. And I think where you are in Amherst Junction, you probably want walls that are going to be R27. We'll round it up to R30. Put 60% of that insulation as foam on the exterior if you can't foam the wall cavities. So that would mean 3 inches of foam on the exterior. Now, if you're using a Thermax, it might be more like 2.5 because that's a higher quality product. It has a better R rating. And what their thought is there is that the backside of the sheathing inside the wall will never get so cold, even at minus 25, that you are going to have condensation. So I don't know if that is a possibility for you.
Well, that's very helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Appreciate it. Ned in Cross Plains, hello.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for taking my call today. Last summer, I had to get a new boiler, and we couldn't vent it out of the chimney because it's an older house with a walk-up attic. And the chimney, long story short, we ended up just ripping it apart and taking it off the top of the roof and side venting with a Tijerlin out of the side of the house off the boiler. And the roofer sold me a solar vent that we put where the chimney used to come out, and we thought it was a good idea to just vent this walk-up attic. But I'll tell you, man, this winter, my house is performing noticeably different, and I think there's a lot of cold coming in and hitting my brick stack and traveling into my house, and I don't have my head around this anymore, and I would appreciate what you think. Should I just vent off?
No, the old
summer, just take it through the winter? And
yeah, now, is the old chimney completely gone?
Well, the stack comes up into the chimney, and then they got it corbeled over so it goes through the apex of the roof. It's a 1928 house. So instead of coming up through any part of the roof, they kind of nudge the bricks over a quarter inch at a time, and it's a really wacky stack.
Yeah, okay. Well, chimneys are really a problem in houses because generally, you know, especially in an older house, it sounds like yours is one, they generally did not frame tight to the chimney because if there was a chimney fire, you know, you didn't want
the framing to catch fire. So very often we find that there's a square foot or 2 square feet of air space between the basement and the attic, where the air is just rushing up there, like a stack. And if you find that the snow is melting from your roof fairly quickly, that can be the case. Now, cold, of course, can also follow that chimney down because there's no insulation. I love getting rid of chimneys wherever we possibly can. And if we have a boiler, if it's a hot water boiler, side vent it. If it is a steam boiler and we still need metal venting, I like to put a B vent in. And I like to take the chimneys out completely and then to air seal the cavity where the chimney used to go up.
And we can talk some more about that if need be. I thank you so much, Ned, for calling. John Freiberger, our guest today, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. He will be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with John. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about home improvement with our regular guest, John Freiberger. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in evaluating older structures. And his firm is Freiberger and Associates. So great to have him with us. Questions about home improvement? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And let's see, Donna in Green Bay has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm helping my father. He's 94 with his house. It's 1960 built. And there was a leak somewhere in the bedroom upstairs, and the wooden floor got all wet, and we dried that out. And now I'm noticing in the living room and in the hallway by the stairs a smell like a urine, salty smell coming out of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know how I can stop that or address it or figure out what's going on.
Well, you're going to have to get some help on that, Donna. I'm afraid that something in that wall got wet and we perhaps have some decay going on, that something could be even be something like a mouse nest. And you're going to need to start with somebody who can, you may have to do a little deconstruction. Perhaps the easiest thing to do is you've got a lot of good home inspectors up in the Green Bay area. And maybe there are two places to find home inspectors. The first is Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors. And then the second one is the American Society of Home Inspectors. And both of those organizations have websites, which you'll find very quickly if you Google. They'll give you a list and often a biography. And so you may look at and say, it'll say John Smith from DePeer specializes in wet walls as well as home inspection. And so I would perhaps start there and explain to them exactly what you're looking for, because some of them are going to say, sorry, I'm only a generalist, and others are going to say, yep, I know a lot about wet walls. But why don't you start there? Because this could be any number of things that have been affected by water. And if we've got a bad smell, that usually means we've got some sort of fungal microbial action going on. So I would start with a home inspector. And if you can't find anybody, ask the home inspector, well, who would you call if you're doing a home inspection, you smelled this, who would you tell the buyers to call? And I'm sure that they will be glad to help you.
All right. Good luck, Donna. Thank you very much for calling. Tom in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, good afternoon, Larry. John, I want to follow up on John's excellent comments on COVID and UV lights and things. I've been researching that myself, and from what I find is, one, coffee tables. And,
we missed you. We lost what you were saying there, Tom.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. You just cut out.
Okay. You want a high-intensity UV light, not one of these things that they sell to put on the coffee table. But to do so, it has to be totally enclosed within the furnace ductwork because you don't want to be exposed to that yourself. Most recommendations that I've seen talk about putting the lights up near the air conditioning coil, which makes sense if you're talking about Legionnaires or other things in the summertime. But for COVID, particularly if you have a high MERV filter, you're capturing most of those COVID viruses in that furnace long before it gets to the UV light. And it just goes into a dormant stage and sort of waits until you go to change your filter, and it seems to me you're going to get exposed. And so my thinking is you would really want to put those UV disinfecting lights in the return air plenum just before the filter so that the light would actually impinge on the dirty side of the filter where it would then kill the COVID virus. And I wonder if John has heard any discussion on this or recommendations.
Extensively, Tom. And I'm going to refer people to ASHRAE, the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, Air Conditioning. You can go online. There's a good 2016 or 2017 article that I know is available. And then there is one that from one of the fall or winter ASHRAE journals that goes into this in great detail. And you are correct. It's got to be the correct light. It has to be a UVC light. And there are other things in ASHRAE that are well worth reading because these lights will cause certain things to deteriorate. So you have to know what various components you have in your filter box, et cetera, because the light will actually cause damage. The lights have to be renewed ever so often. ASHRAE has the graphs on how long a light is good. After a certain period of time, it is not giving out adequate radiation to do anything. The spacing of the lights, I believe if you're trying to just keep mold off a cleaning coil, it's 18 inches, but they have to be 12 inches apart if it's in the return duct. So there are a whole bunch of very complicated specifications, and I would refer people to the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, Air Conditioning at ASHRAE.org to take a look at the specifications. And I think what I will try to do is I'll find this one that was in the last ASHRAE, not the last, but one of the last ASHRAE journals, and see, I will get that copied. And if people want a copy of that, they should be able to email me at frei@chorus.net, and I can send that out to them, along with another very good article called The Effects of Ventilation and Filtration on Viral Infection in Residences, which I think has a lot of useful information as well. I'm always happy to send that additional information to people. And at some point when we update the website the next time, we are going to have a viral section in the indoor air quality folder where you'll be able to find those.
Okay.
So very good questions, Tom.
And so your email again was?
frei@chorus.net, chorus like a group of singers, chorus.
And your website, just back to that for a minute, I know is educatedhomeowner.net.
.net, right.
So, there we go. Thanks again, Tom. Appreciate it. Let's go to Dennis in Fairchild next. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. Yeah, I've got a 1862 is when our house was built. We completely gutted it and put everything back in it new in 96. But the basement is a rock basement. And we got a radon test from, I believe the Kansas University. And it was a year one. We left it in for 9 months, sent it in, and it's come back and said we have an 8 as radon.
Okay, so we're pretty hot.
So how would I rectify that?
Well, with great difficulty, unfortunately. You're really going to have to talk to a mitigation specialist, but with the type of walls or the rubble walls that you have are very are very vapor permeable, whether it's a radioactive gas or it is water vapor. And what you may have to do is you may actually have to, and it's really difficult, is you're going to have to control the air changes in the basement. You may have to have a heat recovery ventilator just for the basement, so that obviously if you did a reading in your living room, if it's 8 downstairs, it might be 4 in your living room. But if you get downstairs down to 3 or something, well, your living room is going to drop to 2. So talk to a local mitigation specialist. Remind them that your walls are highly permeable. And what you may have to do is put in an HRV system so you're changing out that basement air. Now, that's going to help. You won't have to run a dehumidifier in the winter anymore. You're not going to have bad smells down there. If there's any small gas leaks, you won't have to worry about that because your basement is going to have good fresh air. So I would start there. If you don't have a good radon specialist in your area, then if you've got a good HVAC contractor in Fairchild, speak to that person and tell them that you need probably 3 air changes per hour. Your 1996 house, if you did that right and got it nice and tight, is probably about 0.35 air changes per hour. So we're looking at almost 10 times the air changes in the basement, or maybe 8 times, to get that radon down to below. I would put a target of below 2.5 picocuries per cubic deciliter. Does that make sense, Dennis?
And is there any, do you know of any of them around Eau Claire, Wisconsin?
I'm afraid I don't. I occasionally get up to Eau Claire to look at a house. In fact, I'll be up there in a few weeks. But unfortunately, I do not know the contractors up there. But Eau Claire is a big city, and it's well-educated, so you are going to find some people. I don't know for HVAC contractors. You know, there isn't like an association or something that one can go to. So I think, you know, generally what we say with contractors is talk to your neighbors. And when you call the people, when you talk to them, I mean, you already know a lot, Dennis. You knew enough to do a long-term test. So you're going to find somebody. Most of them aren't going to know as much as you do, but you're going to find a couple men or women that know as much or a little bit more, and that'll key you into the person you want to use as a consultant and possibly as an installer. Now, I'm afraid all you can do is do the legwork of phone calls.
Yeah, there you go, Dennis. Thank you. Ryan in Madison, hello.
John, Larry, thank you for taking my call. I have a 1920s brick house that I am... two-story. I'm taking out, or I took down the tile and the plaster in the bathroom. And the exterior wall, I'm thinking about putting spray foam in. I'm going from the inside out. It is, you've got 2x4s, and you have like 1-inch thick boards that are attached to the brick. In between the brick and those boards, there's about an inch airspace, and actually on the boards as well, on the outside, in between the boards and the brick, there is like a paper barrier on that. I'm wondering what you're thinking on if I should be putting two-part closed cell spray foam on there and in those walls, or is that going to have to be a problem with the bricks breathing, or is that a 1-inch air gap enough to... Mm-hmm. Let those bricks breathe.
A real quick question, Ryan. What side of the house is this on?
It is facing south.
Good. Okay. Wonderful. That's the right answer. We are okay. Going. No. I mean, seriously. Especially if it's a darker brick, that means we're going to get some thermal heat. So what's going to happen is when the sun shines and, you know, it rained terribly and the bricks are all saturated and there's water behind the brick between in the airspace, and then the sun is going to hit that, it's going to cause water vapor, but that water vapor is going to be warm and it's going to go up through that airspace. And so we aren't going to be relying upon the drying from the exterior. Now, we are going to have a little bit more limited drying, but it's a small area. We've got communications through there, so I would go ahead and use the spray foam, and that should be just fine.
All right. There you go, Ryan. Thank you. Let's go to Mike in Ashland. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My question for you today is, can you enlighten me about this injection foaming that would be open cell when you have an older home that you don't want to take all the sheetrock off And so you're able to come from the outside and do this injection foaming. What are your thoughts?
With an open cell foam?
Yes, correct. Does that tend to break down over time?
Well, it has so far. Now, maybe new formulas are going to be better, but the injection foams, the open cell foams that we used in the 70s and 80s shrunk about 30%. And when I take out a thermal imager, I can find the chunks that are together and I can find the big air gaps. So I would be very cautious about using that particular approach. It's very difficult, of course, you can't use a highly expansive foam because you blow the walls apart. You've got probably a pretty difficult situation there, Mike. How old is your house?
I would say it's probably 25, 30-year-old cabin on a lake. And, it has R11 in the walls, but there's just a lot of airflow coming through. And I'm just trying to come up with a solution rather than tearing it apart and then doing the closed cell foam. But I just, I think that's only way to do it.
Mike, what kind of condition is the siding in on the house, and what type of siding is it?
You got vinyl siding, and the vinyl siding, the gentleman remodeled it maybe 15 years ago.
Okay, so we've got middle-aged vinyl siding. And this would pertain, I think, also to Robert up at Amherst Junction. You may want to go to the Cold Climate Housing Research Center website, which is cchrc.org. And then click on Building Science, and then take a look at REMOTE, R-E-M-O-T-E, which is Residential Exterior Membrane Outside Insulation Technique. This has been around for a lot of years, for about 20 years. And you will find a couple of nice videos and some other things. I also have some printed articles on it. But basically, when we are retrofitting, rather than go through the expense of getting into those walls, which means taking the vinyl siding off or some of it, I would think instead about taking the vinyl siding off, adding foam to the exterior, and then reusing as much of the vinyl siding as you can. And then maybe on one side of the house, you're going to, obviously after 15 years, it's going to sun fade or something. So maybe you do the back in newer vinyl siding. But if you really want to stop both the air infiltration, exfiltration, and improve the thermal value, I think something like the remote system really makes a lot of sense. And also, if you'd want to dress this up with a wood siding or something, the remote system includes what's called a rain screen system, so that if you did put a wood siding on, it would last a very long time. So take a look at that, and you should find some useful information there from the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, which, as I said earlier, is in Anchorage, Alaska, and they also work with like the Canadian Northwest and Yukon Territories housing offices. So they are really addressing climates that are even worse than we're going to find in Ashland.
Okay.
Well, actually,
there you go, Mike.
Pretty good, because you've got the lake, but certainly get 20 miles outside of Ashland. It's cold today.
Yeah, it is indeed. Mike, thank you. Ann in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering how safe it is to use ice melting chemicals on an asphalt shingle roof. Just for some background, I have at least a foot of snow on my ranch-style house right now. And right before this very cold weather, I did have some dripping inside in the top of a bump-out area above a patio door, and that was the first time I ever had that. So I raked the roof snow off, which is the first time I've ever done that, and did it very carefully after talking with my roofer, but figure that dripping is going to return when the weather warms up next week, and that's not good because the inside walls and ceilings of my house are plaster over drywall. So I'm wondering, what else can I safely do at this point besides raking? You know, how safe is it to use those melting chemicals?
And how old is your house?
It's about 50 years old.
About 50, so 1970s ranch house or two-story?
Ranch, 1969. Okay. And I did have more insulation put in about 25 years ago, but evidently they didn't do a good job over the bump out.
Well, they may have, but the problem is that the insulation that they used may have had a fairly low R factor per inch, and if there's only a couple of inches up there, even if they did a good job and packed it full, it still is inadequate insulation. So I think that what you need to do is you need to have that area looked at. Probably, again, you may be able to find, because you are in Waukesha and there's good home inspectors there, go to the WAHI, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors, or ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors, and find a home inspector who knows about ice dams and has a thermal imager, infrared camera. So he or she can see how cold that area is. And what you may find is that you've got to retrofit that area by having an insulation contractor come in and put spray foam in that particular area. Now, there's one other possibility, Ann. This may have nothing to do with the snow on your roof. This could be condensation that is rising around that big patio door jamb because it leaks air a lot. And that condensation, instead of freezing on the door where you could see it, has frozen above the door in the wall, and it's going to come down. So it's entirely possible it has nothing to do with the snow on your roof. And this is why you need somebody with a thermal imager to look at it. If the home inspector can't do it, you can spend the $400 to $500 to have a full energy audit done, because even though they did a good job adding that insulation, if you have a lot of air leaks in your house, that air is going right through that insulation. Does that help?
Yeah. That and help so there? In the interim right now, is it safe for me to use the roof melting chemicals? Because I am going to have a problem next week when it warms
up.
No.
Don't use them. Not only is it going to damage the roof, it's going to damage the ground and other things. So you're going to be adding salts and potassiums and chlorides and other things, on your lawn and in your bushes that you really don't want. The roof rake was the best way to go. That reduces your problems. And depending upon how old your roof is, your roof, if it's done in the last 20 years, it was supposed to have ice and water shield on it. Next time you redo your roof, this goes for everybody in Wisconsin, the code says you have to come up 1 foot beyond the inside of the exterior wall. Go up at minimum of 2 feet, if not 3 feet, when you're replacing your roof. So if you do get an ice dam, it can't migrate. The water cannot migrate inside. Many of the manufacturers, such as GAF, are already at double what the minimum requirement is in the Wisconsin standard. So if you're going to be replacing the roof in the next couple of years, think about ice damming.
Ann, thank you so much for calling. And John, here we are out of time. Thank you so much. I'll look forward to your next visit in a couple of months. Thanks, John.
My pleasure. And we're hoping that we don't have to talk about cold weather the next time we meet, Larry.
I'm all in favor of that. John Freiberger, our guest today. By way of full disclosure, we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. So good for that as well. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk time. Diana Alfeth and Kevin Chesso talk about shortages of some seeds for spring planting. That's tomorrow at 11 and 6 a.m. on Saturdays. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.